This episode of Humble Holding Up is brought to you by Luna's Llama Adventures.
So this late in the summer, you've probably been to the river.
Yes.
You've done your backyard barbecues.
Several.
You've maybe gone to some baseball games.
Well.
What is there left to do?
Tell me, Steph.
Well, maybe it's time to think about going on an adventure with a llama or two.
Ooh.
With Luna's Llama Adventures, you can book a llama companion for your next hiking or camping trip and have a cute friend by your side who can also carry your stuff.
You could also book llamas to be a fuzzy fun presence at your party or event. Llama weddings, all the rage this season.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just go to lunasllamaadventures.com. It's the new fuzzy thing to do.
So, Goff, you know that I am a big fashion lover.
Yes, I'm aware.
And you also wear clothing.
Often.
So, have you checked out Fat Bowl Clothing in Arcata yet?
Ooh, you know, it's been a bit. Why don't you tell me about that, Steph?
Well, it's this awesome shop in Arcata. They have their own unique clothing print designs. They've got shirts, hats, hoodies, you know, all that stuff that you need to wear in Humboldt. They also do custom screen printing.
Oh,
so
okay.
You can rock your own design or rep for your company or your, you know, bowling team or whatever it is that you're into.
My bowling team has looked a little shabby lately, so this comes as great news.
I thought that it might. Fat Bowl Clothing is at 1618 G Street in Northtown Arcata, or you can check them out online at fatbol.com. It's Humboldt Holding Up, the slightly congested podcast, but that is luckily COVID-free. My name's Stephanie McGarry.
And I'm Andrew Goff. Yeah, we're all getting tested a lot more these days as things get fun again. But we're not going to focus on COVID today, because today on this show, we are going to geek out on housing just a little bit. You know, over the last few months, we've had a few people on this show talking about some of the big projects that Humboldt has staring it in the face, whether that be the HSU Polytechnic or the Nordic Aqua Farms. And the one common hurdle that we keep bringing up in discussing these plans is that our housing stock is meager. So today on the show, we have Brian Heaton, who is a senior housing policy specialist for the California Department of Housing and Community Development. So this guy thinks a lot about housing, but why he's especially good for this is because before he had that very long title, he was a senior planner for the city of Eureka, and he lives here. So he has a vested interest in this community, and he's thought a lot about housing issues, specifically as it relates to Humboldt County. So with that, I say, we talked to Brian.
How are you doing today?
Great.
Shall we just get right to it?
Let's do it.
All right. Ready to talk about housing.
Yeah, it's my favorite topic.
Yes, exactly. So Brian, we kind of think of you as this like housing expert. But most of the time I've interacted with you, it was when you were a senior planner with the city of Eureka, and that's mostly how I know you, but I know that you are no longer with the city of Eureka, and you've now graduated to working with the state. And I thought maybe you could just kind of start by explaining exactly what your role is, and give us a little bit of a summary on what you do. I'm sure that it's a lot, but kind of give us the short version.
Yeah, so I work remotely for the California Department of Housing and Community Development. And kind of our primary responsibility is to review and certify housing elements. All local agencies, every city and county, all 538 of them, have to have a general plan by state law. And one of the elements of that general plan is the housing element. And those have to be reviewed and approved by the state, basically verifying that, the city is documenting a variety of, topics, right? Like they looked into the different income levels, the different housing needs, that they have something, resembling reasonable actions to try to build enough housing. And that's kind of the primary responsibility, I would say, of the whole department. We also do what we call accountability and enforcement. So we provide support to developers who are, proposing projects. And if they are entitled to some sort of, protection through a pro-housing state law, we look into that and try to help, help move the process forward.
Right.
Yeah. Beyond that, just a lot of data, a lot of policy. We support the legislature. We're kind of like the housing planning department of the state of California.
Right.
How does a young man get excited about a life in housing policy?
Well, you just have to appreciate housing.
Okay. But I mean, like, I'm hoping to like to draw out of you like some moment where someone handed Picasso his first brush or
I know what you're after. Yeah, I know what you're after. So
okay,
when I was a kid, I moved around a lot. Yeah. I started my life in Arizona. I lived in Missouri. I lived in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Utah. My family's from Idaho. Spent every summer on the Oregon coast. So I bounced around a lot and. As a result, I had a lot of conversations about geography, and I was really taken by this concept of good places and crappy places, right? Okay. Because everyone has an opinion about geography, right? Even a little kid, you can take them and show them a part of town and they'll say, oh, I like this. I want to hang out here. They'll take them somewhere else. And they're like, this is terrible, right? Literally everyone of every background will tell you a town that they really like for some reason. They can also immediately give you a list of towns that they think are garbage. So I was just interested in this concept of, what is it? What's the special sauce? Like, what is it that makes this city cool or interesting or vibrant, this neighborhood cool or interesting and vibrant, and what makes it dull or scary or unpleasant?
Great.
So that was the birth of, me moving into the planning world. And from there, I just kind of got hooked on housing because housing is such an essential part of whatever you want to do in your life, right? Yeah. You need air, food, water. And then this cool thing happens. You get shelter and you start to kind of understand your environment based on where you live. Like people are really attached to their neighborhoods, this concept. Yeah. It's like, just because I have a home, right? I spend the nighttime hours there. And then I go out in the world and I do things. And then I come back. People just have a natural affinity for the homestead, their neighborhood. Yeah. And part of, rambling too much more, I guess part of what makes urban spaces or really, any space vibrant is a residential component. Yeah. And having people there and having that real buy-in, having that permanent presence of people there in the morning and walking their dogs, people that are there in the afternoons and the evenings and all that, it's just, it's exciting. And in California, we have a pretty kind of radical housing market. So, there's a lot to talk about and think about.
So when you were forming that idea of, like good places and bad places, were there initial places that filled those roles for you? Was there a first bad place and a first good place where you were like, okay, these are my parameters. So now we have to go towards this and not towards this.
I think my first kind of tip off was actually in college towns. That was really what made sense to me, especially as like a middle school age kid, maybe high school kid. If you've never been to a college town, you show up and suddenly you have all of these students walking around. You have people, right? In America, we're kind of a low density place. So in America, a lot of times the most vibrant, interesting, and stimulating environments are on or near college campuses. And I think, maybe that was it. I was walking around Madison, Wisconsin when I was a kid, and I ended up later going there for school. But you just see that energy, and there's bars and there's restaurants and there's people talking and you can people watch. It's kind of like an airport. I think that was kind of what tripped my trigger. And then, I kind of found out that a lot of what makes cities interesting is pretty uniform. And that's offensive to some people because everyone thinks their town is like so radically unique. But really, it's the same ingredients. It's humans walking around that can see other humans. There's places to linger. There's places to eat. There's places to drink. There's people en route. There's a variety of people. People like people. And I think, you know, maybe that's the recipe. You want to think of it that way for something vibrant and interesting. And the opposite, I would say, is a giant asphalt parking lot in a suburban area where it's 8,000 degrees and everyone's blasting along and big roads, multi lanes, you know, and you just feel it's, you know.
So on your paradigm of, good places and bad places, what, you know, you worked for the city of Eureka, where does it rank?
Oh, Eureka's got bones. Eureka's got bones for days. I mean, the intact grid of Eureka is incredible. Yeah. A lot of times you can look at an aerial image of a city and just see how much of the grid, like what proportion of the total city's area is grid, because grid is code for more older, more established, more mature neighborhoods, more mixed use, corner stores, walkable areas. And then as you get to the curvilinear streets, you get into a more, you know, segregated suburban environment. And Eureka's just grid. Eureka's grid all the way to Winco.
Eureka's got grid. That should be our new town, the new town slogan, actually. I like this. Just we like got, Eureka's, we got grid.
And it just rolls off the waterfront. I mean, it's like we kind of, I see Eureka as having a spine. EF&G is the spine of Eureka. And that spine connects to the soul, you know, our waterfront, the head, old town. Yeah. I mean, it's a nervous system, right? It's like everything you want. You can start right there at, you know, Coast Guard Plaza and just keep walking for what is it, a couple miles?
Yeah.
So and if EF&G are
all along the way.
If EF&G are the spine of Eureka, then what is Broadway? The intestinal track? The tail, the part that should be removed.
Broadway was pretty interesting because Broadway was built after World War II on swampy, low-lying land. You know, that was a vision of the war is over. We need big lots. We need faster, you know, a bigger, faster road to make this work. And, you know, that was Eureka's attempt at commercial, you know, suburbanization. You know, and where the mall was a mill. So we kind of get that. But again, it was really waterfront. We think of Broadway as commercial, right? Retail uses and service uses. But South Broadway was industrial. It's industrial waterfront.
Well, we'll get into what we were planning to talk about. But in your time in the city of Eureka, you know, I feel like you're casting dispersions at Broadway a little bit, if I'm reading your tone there. But like, what would you say it has been historically Eureka's greatest planning mistake?
You know, I don't think you can even really call Broadway a mistake, because if 99% of all other cities have something that is almost exactly equivalent, that we're around with the same population in the same era, it's kind of like, like everyone had, you know, weird hair in the 80s. Like, I don't think we can, you know, like single out Eureka as being like, oh, they went off the rails. No, I mean, I think mostly what's amazing about Eureka is just how intact it is. The grid is intact, how much of our architecture we have. Just the diversity of our urban form, I guess we'll put it that way.
Yeah.
Okay.
So let's talk about, then creating more housing, which is, you know, something that obviously every place I think is trying to do right now. But we know, you know, that in Eureka, it's been a hot topic, and that Eureka really needs to create more housing, like a lot more and quickly, and or as quickly as can be. And one of the main ways that the city is planning to do that is through infill. And the city, you know, has this strategy that it's, you know, part of that plan that it's currently executing is building housing on a bunch of city-owned parking lots. And some people, Brian, just seem to be playing mad about this. So why do you think these people so mad? And and why do you think they should not be?
Well, why are people mad? Well, I think, you know, at the most basic level, you know, people are conservative by nature, right? We have this concern that if a change is made, any kind of change, that there's the potential that it will result in a negative outcome for me, right? So yeah, if you're a business owner, you know, downtown, and you're obviously very focused and interested in the success of your business. Yeah, I mean, you might kind of think along those lines of, well, you know, if this is parking or if these are more people, you know, more traffic, more confusion, more whatnot. Yeah, I mean, I see that as a concern, but, you know, I would kind of challenge everyone to zoom out a little bit on the broader kind of ramifications of not building housing, which at the most basic level of, you know, real estate economics, it really comes down to supply and demand. And there is a certain number of housing units that are available, certain number of apartments at a certain affordability, there are a certain number of single family homes. And what we have done in California in the last 50 years, including in Eureka, is to basically just not create that much housing. The demand has continued to incrementally go up, but the supply has stayed fixed. And if you really want to break it down to just the simplest nuts and bolts, when you have more people competing for the same number of homes, the people that have the most resources will outcompete the people with less resources. So there's kind of two ways to look at it. You know, you can either try to increase supply, which is what I advocate for, or by some miracle, you need to decrease demand. And that's challenging for a number of reasons, because, you know, a lot of what people like is economic development, right? We like the idea that our local businesses will grow. We like the idea that HSU will turn into a polytechnic. We like this idea that people will start new businesses. You know, for the most, like, you can imagine really, you know, any local business, you know, if they put a sign out the next, you know, tomorrow saying our business is booming, we're going to hire 10 more people, right? Most people would cheer that on and say, awesome, we have this local business, they're really successful. But those 10 people need to go somewhere. So that's really the issue in a nutshell. And there's more attention being paid now on equity in these topics, because like I said, when an increasing number of people are competing for the same homes, the people that will lose that competition are going to be lower income people. They're going to be recent immigrants. They're going to be younger people. And the winners will be people from out of the area that have already rode that property wave. It's an ugly situation. So I think part of what inspires me to push hard, on this, I'm not actually choking up. I really was just
in my throat. No, I like it. It's okay. Yeah, it's okay. Right. It's an emotional subject. It's okay.
We appreciate your passion.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm inspired now to really try to, you know, hit the gas on this, to try to get these units built, to get our overall numbers up and to see that happen in Humboldt County, because I don't want Humboldt County to become Santa Cruz. You know, I don't want to wake up and have a situation where every house in Eureka is $1 million, and, you know, and people go through the just insane things that they have to do to try to live in a market like that. I mean, already so many households, it's a crazy statistic. I don't have it in front of me, but the number of households in California that pay more than 50% of their income towards rent is horrible. And it has so many downstream problems. You know, when people are paying not just 30%, they're paying 40%, 50%, 60% of their income in rent, and then it becomes an absolute impossibility to buy. And, you know, there's problems with this. And I don't see any alternative in Humboldt County other than to increase supply. So the question becomes, okay, if we can agree that we need to increase supply, where should it go? And we can't put it in coastal ag lands. They're going underwater anyway, right? We're not going to put it, you know, in the tsunami inundation zone. We don't want to run roads up every hillside, right? Diamond Drive and California Street in Arcata are beautiful streets with lovely homes. We're obviously not going to go create, you know, 30 more miles of Diamond Drive and California Street. You know, where are we going to go? And then the short answer is infill, build up, you know, mid-rise buildings in downtown Eureka, mid-rise buildings in the urban core of Arcata, mid-rise buildings even in McKinleyville. You know, that's, you can create a heck of a lot of homes with a three-story building, four-story building.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, in talking to people in Eureka that have expressed some sort of vested interest in this, one pushback they give is just, you know, the aesthetic considerations of the city. I don't know. I mean, how do you answer those people that have that see this kind of housing as being blight?
Yeah, I guess you have to dig a little bit deeper. When some people complain about the aesthetics, they're talking about materials, right? They don't want a stucco box, or they don't want a building with a flat roof. Local zoning can and does have the power to regulate that. You know, that is a problem that City Hall can solve. If we decide that we want pitched roofs, because that's the kind of town we are, and we want hardy board siding and a combination of vertically oriented and horizontally oriented, you know, siding, we can do that. We can require bay windows. We can do all that. If the problem is the massing of the structure, I just go back to this concept of what is traditional. You know, we have 5 and 6 story tall buildings in downtown Eureka. That's not a new concept. Yeah. And if you look at our zoning, where those taller buildings are proposed is downtown in the same areas where we have a historical precedent that's already been set. And then some people say, oh, well, we're Victorian. And I say, we have many examples of mid-century architecture. I mean, City Hall itself is a mid-century building. The beloved Pearson homes that are scattered everywhere throughout Eureka are also mid-century modern. So this idea that, you know, the Victorian era of architecture, which was cool, and I'm proud of it, and we should all be proud of it, it's not representative of something, you know, as a limitation, I guess I would put.
Yeah. Right. Staying on this subject of how to fix Eureka, I will mention that though you and I have never spoken, we are colleagues in that last week you launched what I believe is supposed to be a new and regular column on Loco, the very sexily named Land Use and You. And in this first edition, you make an argument that one way to attack Eureka and Humboldt's housing crisis as to, as you put it, get small, you know, specifically this idea that maybe the lots in our populated places are too big. So instead of like 5,000 to 8,000 square foot lots, maybe we only have 2,000 to 3,000 square foot lots. So I thought maybe we'd talk about this. You know, I'm assuming because you wrote this that smaller lots are something that you are at least somewhat an advocate for. Yeah.
Yes, I am an advocate of small lots.
Okay. And so why do you believe Humboldt in particular would benefit from being a little bit more tightly packed in this way?
Yeah. Well, kind of two main reasons come to mind. The first is that most of our land is built out. You know, there are lots of neighborhoods, lots of blocks have a building on every lot. And then the question becomes, how do you do infill in these situations? And in most situations, we don't want to see demolitions of existing structures. So one way that you can release kind of a pressure release valve for development is to allow the incremental, you know, development of additional structures on lots that already have structures. So let's say there's a, you know, a duplex and it has a big backyard, right? You can add maybe another unit in the backyard, and that brings it from a duplex up to a triplex. So that's one strategy. But what you find when that happens is you end up taking rental housing and creating more rental housing, which limits opportunities for home ownership and the equity that can be built from home ownership. Because, you know, right now the building new single family homes is something that is only accessible to people with a considerable amount of money, right? Today you can go buy a brand new construction single family home in McKinleyville or Fortuna, and it's going to cost you $500,000. In Eureka's situation, you know, being able to carve off a backyard that's unused grass, building a home on it and selling it has some, you know, real tangible benefits. It could be used for, you know, seniors trying to downsize. It could be a first home for a small, you know, for a couple or a small family. And also we already have this concept in California, which is the ADU, the mother-in-law unit.
Yeah.
And what you'll notice is a lot of ADUs are a house, a single family house with this new cottage in the back. And ADUs were conceived of to be rental housing. So you cannot sell the ADU separately. But my question is who can tell? I mean, these are invisible lines on a map, right? I kind of like the idea that a person could buy the ADU, right? It could become their home. They don't, it doesn't, we don't have to be a world where one person owns a house and an ADU and then somebody rents the ADU. We could live in a world where a person owns their house and lives in their house and then their neighbor, you know, their former renter now is a homeowner and they just, you know, maybe they only want 1,000 square feet of their own little private cottage.
I mean, what are the hurdles standing in the way of people being able to, you know, say they, someone in Eureka already has an existing ADU, you know, why can't they sell it?
Well, I mean, that was how ADUs were conceived. I believe in, oh, don't quote me on this, but I think in statute, that's part of the definition is that they were not intended to be sold separately. They were intended to be their accessory to, you know, accessory dwelling unit, their accessory to the main single family home. Moving in the direction of small lot subdivisions is just saying, hey, it looks exactly the same. There's a house in the front and then there's a small house in the back. It's just changing.
But I guess what I'm trying to say, like, you know, in in Eureka specifically, like how do we get to this new utopia where we could, you know, people could subdivide their lots and like what has to happen?
Oh, I mean, they already can. Basically in any multifamily zone in Eureka, which is everything generally speaking north of Wabash, you can do it. You would have to hire a surveyor who would write up a new legal description that would get you a new map. It would be recorded. Then you would have for a while, you would have two deeds. You would own your backyard, which would be a piece of raw land. And then your house would now be a house on a smaller lot than it was previously. And then they can be sold. You could go get a building permit and build a new little house on it and sell it just like any other house.
So it would be the people that, you know, own these the properties, you know, build, having a house built there themselves, you know, paying for it.
I mean, it could go either way. I mean, if you have, let's say you live somewhere in Eureka in a multifamily zone, you have a big backyard, you could subdivide yourself and then you could just sell the land and then walk away from it, or you could develop it yourself and then sell it. There's a million ways to do it. In the end, it's really just a separate lot.
Are there people already doing this? Have we seen like an uptick in this at all? Or is this?
There's one that has went through already that I'm aware of. There's another one that was in the concept phase that was also.
Is there like I suppose selling that you would be able to make money. So that would be like the incentive. I guess I was thinking like, why would a person, you know, want to do this? What would be the advantage to them, since we know people care about how things affect
let's not beat around the bush. Like land is an asset, right? Yeah. People buy land as an investment. That's the basic idea. It just provides more options. That's really all it does. It doesn't obviously force anyone. If you have a house with an enormous backyard and you love your backyard, then don't subdivide. But if you own a couple houses that you rent out and you're looking at the backyard of one of them and you're like, man, I'm tired of mowing this. My tenants don't do anything back here anyway. I would like to subdivide this and then sell it so someone can build another house, or I'll build another house on it. It's giving off.
So you would not say we're at a point of crisis whereby we might need to start urging people with big backyards to be like, hey, you got a big backyard there. A lot of people without houses, man. I don't know.
No, you know, it's not about urging.
Yeah.
You know, it's just about providing more options. Really what it comes down to.
This episode of Humboldt Holding Up is brought to you by Luna's Llama Adventures. Oh, what was that, Andrew?
I've been working on my llama call. Do you wanna hear it again?
I don't really think.
Not bad, right? I've just been so excited since Luna's Llama's Adventures started booking llama tours, wherein you, the fun, outdoorsy, humbled adventurer, head out into nature with a hardy and fuzzy llama companion. Do you have any llama hike selfies, Steph?
Not yet, Andrew. But that's going to change really soon when I go to lunaslamaadventures.com and book my llama trek.
You know what I could really go for right now? A fat bowl
of ice cream, I assume, is what you're talking about, because that's what I know that you love.
Well, I do love ice cream, but you didn't let me finish.
I'm always cutting you off.
Steamrolling me all the time. I was going to say, if you would shut up for a second, a fat bowl clothing item or other piece of quality Humboldt merchandise, because I was talking about Fat Bowl, FATB. The clothing company in Arcata.
Right.
Yes. They sell custom clothing, art supplies, gifts, and accessories. And you know what else, Goff? They also have disc golf supplies. I know how much you're into disc golf.
You know me. I love to rattle some chains. Is that what they say?
I think that that's a thing that they say.
And if they don't, they should.
I'm pretty sure that's a thing they say, but maybe we can go ask them over at Fat Bowl Clothing, which is
You want to go rattle some chains?
Fat Bowl Clothing is on G Street in Arcata. They're right across the street from Northtown Coffee, or you can check them out online, fatbol.com.
Do it.
So as you know, Brian, I live in beautiful Arcata, and I feel like compared to Eureka, I suppose I don't really know, but it seems like here the lack of housing stock is like really apparent. It's hard to find an affordable place to buy or rent sometimes in Arcata. And you know, one of the concerns right now, one of the topics coming up is definitely HSU's plan to go polytechnic. And you mentioned that earlier, that you know, most people seem to see that as a good thing, but it's definitely going to bring more people. I mean, recently the Cal Poly Humboldt draft prospectus, I think they call it draft prospectus, was released, and one of the things that the plan says is that the university is going to double its student body, and they definitely included plans to build a significant amount of additional housing too, but not enough, I think, to house double the student body. And then plus there'll be, you know, the staff and faculty as well. So, you know, where are we going to put all of these people?
I mean, the short answer is in mid-rise buildings in or near downtown, walkable, bikeable, urban developments.
And does the city of Arcata have a plan for building these developments?
I think that's the strategic infill redevelopment program. I mean, I think that's the elevator speech for it. You know, the area, and I'm not, you know, speaking for Arcata, but I know that that's a big planning effort going on right now, where there is a kind of an old light industrial area that's centered on K Street that's just west of downtown, and it's frankly underutilized. It's things like mini storage and a 1960s car wash, and it just happens to be
Gateway District.
Yeah, the Gateway District. Yeah, I mean, it's walkable. It's walking distance from HSU, comfortable walking distance. It's comfortable walking distance from the plaza. It's got the trail right there. I mean, you can ride your bike to the Malell Dunes. Like, it's just, as far as desirable geography goes, I'm not sure, you know, if I could beat it. The idea is to say we're going to accommodate, people there.
Can we try to make the university build more of that, or does that need to be up to the city?
That's a really interesting question. Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any obligation that a university has to, you know, the university system has to provide housing for all students. It'd be interesting. I mean, we could have laws like that. I think that I would imagine that the university system understands the connection between, you know, the education of a mind and the requirement that that mind goes home to decent housing at the end of the day, you know, while they're developing their brain. But no, I mean, it's a fair question. And I did the math myself, right? I was adding it up in the little table, like, okay, so they're going to double enrollment. They're going to have 6,000 students. We'll say another 1,000 faculty and support staff. Okay, 7,000 people. They proposed, 2,500 beds? 2,500, 7,000. Not the same number.
Don't have to be a mathematician there.
Yeah, I don't think you need to be a mathematician to understand that. So where do the other ones go? And yeah, it's the answer is all of the above when it comes to housing strategies. It's a completely, you know, it's a fool's errand to try to pick one silver bullet that's going to work. It's everything from, you know, more ADUs being built in Eureka to, you know, additional homes being built in Fortuna to, like,
well, everything. Yeah. And I was going to say, you know, like, you know, in addition to all these students we're supposedly getting, there's this other phenomenon where every summer I look at a national weather map and I'll see this whole sea of 90s and 100s. And then you look at Eureka and it says, and you know, the thinking is that with the way things are headed, people elsewhere are going to catch on to this, and Humboldt is going to be super attractive to these so-called, you know, climate refugees, which I think like leads to this new tension, because you want to accommodate people in need, right? But you also want to preserve some semblance of why we all love living here. You know, so as we look at like where we might be able to put this potential influx of people fleeing the climate catastrophe, I don't know, which areas of Humboldt do you see as having like the most growth potential?
Can I answer a different question?
Well, I guess I can't stop you.
before we get there, I would kind of challenge a basic assumption in that is that, you know, what are these humans? Like, are they an asset or are they a liability?
What are these humans?
What even are
humans? Yeah. I mean, I think different people would have different answers to it.
If you see them as a liability, as a burden, as a, you know, contaminant, you know, you're going to have a different perspective on these migrants, right? The climate, you know, folks moving in for the climate that have been pushed out of, you know, Sonoma County because it's always on fire. These students, right? It's like, what is the value of a human that comes to Humboldt County?
No, absolutely. They're good. They're going to bring a vibrance and, you know, new ideas. And I think, you know, there's certainly a segment of our population that shudders at those ideas. I am not one of them, but you know, but they're also, I don't know. It's going to be different, which is fine.
Yeah. I think that one of the things I wouldn't want to see, and I think a lot of other people don't, is seeing like people starting to have just like their another place that they own that becomes their vacation home in the summer in you know, Humboldt, in Eureka or Arcata, or, you know, that more seeing the value, that the value here is really increasing, that there's going to be more people just, you know, trying to buy up homes and then, you know, rent them to people, and seeing that, like, that people from out of the area that don't necessarily want this to be their home actually taking up, you know, the available housing stock. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. What would the proportion be, right? You know, how could we categorize people and anticipate them into whether they are coming, you know, to lower their shoulder into Humboldt and help us, and to bring their minds and their ambitions and their capital and, you know, to make our, you know, our county even better, versus, you know, the idle playground of those with an overabundance of resources that would just like to, you know, cool their toes in the summer months. What is that, like the like the British in India, like the hill stations, right? I mean, it's like right? You're done with your administrative duties in Calcutta, and then you go up to Darjeeling, you know, to drink tea at your estate. I don't know that question, but my hunch is that it will be a relatively small minority. I think most people coming here, if they're coming up here, are coming up here to be a part of the community, and they're going to get serious about being here, and I think they'll be permanent.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, because the idea, yeah, we have all these projects. We have the Polytechnic, we have potential wind, we have the fiber optic cable, we have the Nordic Fish Farm. There's a lot of reasons to believe that Humboldt has a lot, is going to have a lot going for it, and this housing thing is the is maybe the hurdle standing in the way of that. So I guess, you know, back to my initial query, just like, is there some part of the county that you see as being, you know, having high potential for, you know, growth, just like, you know, massive housing projects?
I don't think we'll ever need to do massive housing projects. I think we need to do mid-rise. I think we need to do five-story buildings. And I think they are great for our downtowns. I think all the downtowns, I think downtown Arcata would thrive with thousands more residents. I think the businesses would be more vibrant. I think downtown Eureka could accommodate 5,000 more people. I mean, and downtown would just get more interesting. It would get safer. It would support more businesses. There'd be more people on the trails. I think if, you know, the more people that we can accommodate in our urban areas, our downtown areas, the less we will need to sprawl out into the majestic nature and beautiful coastal ag lands that are typical of Humboldt County. That's really the thing. You know, so when people say, oh, well, it's like, I don't want to see a mid-rise building in downtown Eureka. I'm like, well, would you like to see a 200 lot subdivision between on your drive from Arcata to Blue Lake? I think that's the best example. I love it. Every time I go to Blue Lake, I drive by and I say, wow, this is cool because this is actually ag land.
Yeah.
This is not all tract homes. And it could be, right? That's the other option. I don't like the term sprawl because it has such a, you know, kind of negative connotation, but low density greenfield development on the periphery is going to hurt the livability and desirability of Humboldt County. I want to see my barns and my cows when I drive around Humboldt County. Right. And the best way to keep the barns and the cows and the forests being barns and cows and forests is to build mid-rise buildings in downtown areas.
Yeah.
Right.
You mentioned something that I don't know that we've really, I've heard a lot of people talk about. You mentioned, you know, if we have a lot more people in the Old Town area, that would inherently make that place safer, which I don't, maybe that is an argument that is a key to kind of lessening people's displeasure with some of these ideas, because I think, you know, public safety is another thing that's, you know, top on people that live in Eureka's minds. So maybe you can talk a little bit about that. You know, why if you infill in this way, does an area become safer?
Yeah, I mean, maybe a better way to rephrase it is to say the perception of safety. Like, I don't think the crime statistics really bear out that it's particularly dangerous to walk, you know, Eureka at 9 o'clock at night. Like, I don't think the stats are there. But the perception of safety, that is a real thing. And the truth is, people feel safer when they see other people. So just having more residents means that people will be coming to and from their jobs, which, considering there's more jobs in downtown Eureka than anywhere else in Humboldt County, that's reasonable. People will be walking their dog, right? We'll have a mixture of ages. So there'll be people in their 70s that will also be there, and they'll be, you know, meeting each other to talk about this and that. To some extent, there'll be kids, although, to be honest, I think, you know, most people that are going to have a family are going to self-select into a single family home if they can. The same thing with college kids, right? There'll be kids, you know, heading to campus, heading to the coffee shop to study or to do their shift as a barista. I think the perception of downtown, both that it would be safer and more economically vibrant, I think there's an extremely powerful case for that.
But some people definitely feel the opposite or have the concern that it's like the opposite, that they think having a sort of higher density, low income housing development is like a magnet for crime. I mean, what do you say to that?
Well, yeah, and that's another topic that I want to address in this new series. Is what is affordable housing, right? What are low income people? There is an actual chart that's defined by the state of California that breaks all of us down by county into income levels. And low income people earn 80% of the area median income. And it's based on the number of people in your family. So for example, these link housing developments, some of the units are what they call at a low income level and some are at a very low income level, but they are households that earn between $17,000 and $77,000 per year, which is right in line with the average of Eureka. You know, a couple where each person makes $36,000 a year is low income.
Sorry. I'm like, right. Oh yeah, I'm definitely.
You know, so that's the other thing is like, it's low. It's like, who are these mystery low income people that are going to create crime? It's like, we can go find them. Like we can find them. Like, let's go find a retail store in Eureka. We'll walk in and then we can just like, that gentleman washing dishes right there is a low income Eurekan. And shockingly, I don't feel scared of him. He looks like a reasonable person. He showed up to work this morning. He's been washing dishes for 8 hours.
Yeah, he's doing something essential that we all love. Yeah.
It's so the idea that someone's mad that this guy's going to get off his shift at the diner and come in to his apartment in your neighborhood and that he's a threat. I mean, come on, man. Like, these are working class people. This is Eureka.
Yeah.
Right. Just trying to do drugs in the privacy of their own home. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, what time is it?
What is this? I want to talk about something, though, Brian, that we talked about once before that I find is really interesting. And it was that we talked about this sort of like pride of place. Like earlier you were mentioning, you know, that people want to see their own town as like being the best and having these really unique aspects that make it vibrant and cool and radical. And that like Eureka has this sort of self-hate like thing going on. That like Eureka is like a very self-deprecating town, and like people really love to say that it's awful. Like what?
Radical. Yeah. I've never seen anything like it. I've lived all over.
Yeah, you mentioned that before.
I've never seen as much self-criticism at a civic. It's like the opposite of boosterism.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what it was. I wasn't here during the years of Milk and Honey, you know, when we had 8 gazillion mills and everybody was like, yep, I got my job. I'm going to go buy a house and like 2 cars and a boat and have 16 kids. On my mill wage. So maybe that's what it is. It's just the historical comparison. But no, it's wild, because if you're ever in Fargo, first of all, cute little town, weird. Fargo, North Dakota is the opposite of Eureka. Because when you go to Fargo, like people from like not from Fargo, they see it as a crappy place. Because they're like, it's cold, it's flat, there's no trees, there's not much in the way of cultural amenities. But you go to Fargo and they're the most upbeat, like pro Fargo people ever. They love life. You talk to them and you're just, I spent a summer there. And they're like, oh man, like, what do you mean? Like people don't like Fargo? It's wonderful. Great community, affordable housing.
We have that wonderful crime. Movie.
Yeah, they're just about like, us? Why would you live anywhere but here? Like, you know, and I think, I don't know. It is a mystery to me of why Eureka.
Yeah, I can't unlock it. It's why those stickers were necessary, man. Just like just reinforce, like, no, I like Eureka.
But even that is what is amazing to me, is that even
it's defensive. Yeah, we've talked about this.
is that we don't even have we won't even go so far as to say I love Eureka. We're even the people who are proud to be in Eureka can only say that they like it. loves it.
The inference is that that sticker is following somebody just shitting on Eureka for half an hour. And you're like, I like Eureka.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't think it's so bad. I know. And it's really like it. And obviously Eureka is kind of getting, in my mind, as an Arcada person who obviously hates Eureka. That's another thing, is like, I think maybe that's part of it, is because in a lot of places you would think of, you know, this town, the kind of biggest town, as being the cultural center of the place, and that maybe because Arcata is the college town, it's sort of seen as like the hipper place, and Eureka just kind of got, you're like shaking your head like no.
I don't even know where to start that. I don't think that the cultural capital of Humboldt is Arcata over Eureka.
Excuse me.
No. I would say, like, you know, about 5 or 6 years ago, there was a changing of the guard, and Eureka finally stepped up and said, look, Arcata, you had your day, but we're getting cool now.
Yeah, but that's what I was going to say, is that from my perspective, Eureka has been getting cooler. It's becoming more appealing, and I think that the attitude is shifting.
Eureka's a DIY town. It has been inherited. It has been inherited by anyone that wants to come out of their house and be a part of it, which to me is inspiring, and I hope to see that energy and momentum roll forward with our new, you know, our future Eurekans that are coming from wherever they're coming from. You know, I hope we can maintain that spirit of saying, hey, you want to move here? You want to be a part of this? You want to, you know, invest your blood, sweat, and tears and make this a home? I hope we retain that. And I think that, frankly, that's something that Arcata is in a less good position to accomplish. I think Arcata is more exclusive. The costs are higher. Mm-hmm. It's just, you can't, it's harder to get into Club Arcata than into Club Eureka.
Yeah.
Right.
You're calling Arcata a snob, and I'm here for it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's true. It's true.
So as we, you know, kind of get to near the end of this, you know, it occurs to me that housing is admittedly something that I don't spend a lot of time thinking about. You do. So maybe there are aspects of your field that you are dying to talk about that I know that I'm too dumb to come up with the question to ask you. So is there anything else about you know, progressive housing concepts or strategies that you think could apply to Humboldt that you're just dying to get off your chest and inspire people with?
Man, that's a tough question. There's so much stuff going on right now in the world of housing, because unfortunately, the fact that we've arrived at this crisis, kind of like crisis status. I mean, in Humboldt, no, I think we're on the right track. I think it's just going to be challenging to have people start to, you know, think about the potential of these new folks moving in and of the potential for infill housing and for taller buildings. I think that's going to be the challenge, but it's a driver. You know, if we can build the housing, it's like an engine that will propel us forward. And I think when, you know, that's the biggest concept. And that's what gets me the most excited, is, you know, a few thousand more people is not a few thousand more people draining the life force out of Humboldt. A few thousand people is a few thousand engines that are all hitched up, you know, pulling us towards a more vibrant, more interesting, more equitable community. And I hope more people see other humans as assets and not liabilities.
Yeah. And then the one, you know, last burning question, we took a big survey. We're like, people of Humboldt, what do you want to know from Brian Heaton? And just the overwhelming majority is just like, when can we expect the next edition of Land Use and You?
Next month.
Okay.
Next month.
It's a monthly.
Yeah, it's monthly.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So check it out. Land Use and You.
Yeah. And is there anything else that you wanted to say for me?
No, I appreciate the opportunities to rant.
Yeah, no, I feel like you could have ranted for much longer and I would have been interested to hear it.
You're a good ranter. We like your rant.
It's a fun topic. How do you, what's more fun than this? I mean, name one thing. Name one thing that's more fun than this. I bet you can. Urban design.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Brian. It's been awesome. It's been nice to see you.
It's a blast. Happy to be on.
And we'll be looking for future columns. And
one a month until I run out of ideas, which I don't think will be likely.
It's a broad topic. Broad topic.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. All right. Bye. Bye. Okay, well, thanks so much to the Humboldt County housing expert, I'll call him, Brian Heaton, for joining us today and sharing a little bit of his knowledge and his hopes and dreams.
Yeah, do you feel like after I talk to someone like Brian, like I always feel a little bit more optimistic?
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, there are people much smarter than me that are thinking about this. And I can go about being, I'm going to go.
Just being a doobie on the beach. Yeah. And I can just go about my being kind of a shitty person life. Brian helps me be comfortable just being a lazy asshole because he's got it under control.
He's an upbeat housing nerd.
And isn't that what the world needs more?
I guess. All right. Well, thank you for listening. And as always,
don't go changing. Unless you're not vaccinated,
actually, many of us need to change many of our habits. Everyone go changing.
Yes.
Bye. Okay, Steph, we got one more of these Fat Bowl ads we are blessed to be able to do. I have the copy for it right here. You want to do it? Should we do this?
Yeah, of course. I'm so excited. I love Fat Bowl.
Okay, well, here's how this ad reads. He goes, "Hey, Humboldt, come down to Fat Bowl store at 1618 G Street, Arcata, and check out their new designs. They have clothing for men and women, and they maintain a clean and healthy store."
Oh, well, that's good.
Digression. I think like that's a wink, wink. Like, hey, we're trying to not have COVID in our store. That's how I read that. Okay, but anyway, come check out deals on disc golf equipment, art supplies, gifts, and accessories, and 25% off on all smoking supplies. Which I think they're talking about weed. You can't say that. I think it's for a radio ad, but this is a podcast, so we can just say weed.
We can say weed all day long, baby.
Come get your weed smoking supplies.
What, are you not allowed to say weed on the radio? Whatever, anyway.
Okay. If you're interested in branding or merchandise for your business, their custom printing services will have you covered. Get your brand on t-shirts, hats, hoodies, lighters, keychains, or just about anything else you can think of. That's good. I could think of a lot.
I could, but not right now.
But not right now, okay. Fat Bowl, again, located on G Street in Arcata, across from Northtown Coffee. Fat Bowl is a local, you know him, you love him. Go give him pay him a visit and tell him that Stephanie sent you. So, in closing, again, we here at Humboldt Holding Up implore you, please, just go hiking with a llama in the Redwoods, would ya? Like, it's not that often that people take a chance to offer our area a new experience, but that is what the fine folks at Luna's Llama Adventure have done. So, are you hearing me, Steph?
Oh, Andrew, I'm hearing you. This mama loves a llama.
More than Obama in pajamas?
Ooh, I've never seen Obama in pajamas, but I would like to.
We've gone off course. This mama should go to lunaslamaadventures.com and book her mama-friendly llama tour today.
Don't tell me what to do.